Great. So, if you'd like to have your Bibles open at that passage that we had read earlier, so Mark 5, verse 21 and onwards. So, in this passage, we've been introduced to two different people. They're both very different. So one man is high up in society. He's the leader of the synagogue. He's quite powerful. He's well known in the community. Known by everyone in the town, has authority and is respected. But there's another, an ill woman. She's been ill for 12 years, outcast by society, looked down upon. She's unclean and has to stay away from everyone else. As I was studying this passage, the theme that I've drawn out for this sermon is that we are saved through faith in Jesus Christ, who we must come to humbly in fear and desperation. Both these people are so different in the eyes of the world, but they're made equal before Jesus. So first, let's see what's happening in this story. So at the start of chapter 5, we see that Jesus has gone to Gerasenes. He's only been gone a couple of days and he's come back at the start of where we've read this morning. In this crowd, there's a man named Jairus, the one who is the leader of the synagogue, but his daughter has fallen ill. You can imagine him in the crowd waiting eagerly, hoping that he might just be able to talk to this Jesus, that he might just come and heal his daughter. He's had to leave his home, come down to the shore where he knows Jesus is coming, in hope that he might just come with him and touch his hand on his daughter. And Jairus, for him, it might have been quite controversial for him to come down. He's a leader of the synagogue. Only a couple of chapters earlier, in chapter 3, do we see where Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath with the shriveled hand, and all the Pharisees plot against him to kill him when they see him doing this on the Sabbath. Yet Jairus is here to see Jesus. He hears that story and isn't angry. He doesn't want to kill Jesus. He hears some hope that someone might be able to heal his ill daughter. He's had to leave home and put all his trust into Jesus. He doesn't know whether his daughter will still be alive when he gets back. So what does he do when Jesus comes to the shore? He runs up to him. He falls at his feet. He's begging that he might come with him. He pleads earnestly for him to come. My little daughter is dying. Please come with me so that you may lay your hands on her and she may be healed and live. He might have said this over again, making a fuss in the crowd, clinging to his clothes. Please, just come so you can heal my daughter. And Jesus goes with him. What relief. It might actually work. His hope's been put on Jesus. He's gone down to the shore to find him. And he's actually come. But there's a large crowd. In Luke's account of this story, it says that the crowds almost crushed him. Like an ambulance stuck in traffic. It's frustrating, hopeless. And to top this off, to frustrate Jairus even more, they get stopped again. There's this woman, subject to 12 years of pain and suffering, a bleed that hasn't stopped. She's tried everything she can. She's seen numerous doctors. She's spent all her money on trying to be fixed, but none of it has worked. Jesus is her final hope, her only hope. This woman would have been viewed as unclean by society and would have had to stay away from the temple, stay away from crowds, stay away from people. She couldn't live a normal life. In Leviticus 15, verse 25, it says, when a woman has a discharge of blood that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has this discharge. She knows that she's ill. She knows that she can't go into this crowd, but she also knows that she has to see Jesus. In verse 27, she comes up behind Jesus in the crowd, and in her heart she says, if I can just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And immediately, when she touches Jesus' clothes, she's healed. It's a miracle. She's saved from her suffering and completely saved and healed, made new. But Jesus also knows something has happened, turns around in the crowd and asks, "Who touched me?" The disciples look at him as if he's crazy. In Luke's account, we see that the crowds were almost crushing. And they think, "What? You're asking, who's touched you? Everyone's touching you." But he turns around again and asks, "Who touched me?" And the woman knows. She knows that something's happened, that she's been saved. And she has to admit to Jesus that it was her. Their eyes might have locked, and Jesus would have known, and she would have known, and she knew that she had to come and talk to him. But like we've already mentioned about this fear, rather than her leaping in the air, "Yay, I'm saved, it's gone, these 12 years of pain are finished," we see her at the feet of Jesus, trembling with fear. Maybe she thinks she's going to be told off, shunned for bringing her uncleanliness into this crowd. Jairus is there, leader of the synagogue. He would have probably known this woman, known how unclean she was. But all she can do is fear. She's worried. But Jesus isn't angry. He knows, he wants to acknowledge her. He wants to know who he's saved. And he encourages her and comforts her. And he says to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." Jesus has just been in contact with someone unclean, but Jesus has not been made unclean. He has cleansed her and saved her. Free from her burdens, pain and sorrow that this illness has brought her. But whilst this is going on, Jairus is still there. His daughter is still dying. He might even be frustrated or annoyed at Jesus for stopping for this unclean woman, slowing them down. And on the way, as they've just dealt with this problem, another one comes. People have run up to Jairus from his home and told him that his daughter has died. He's made this risk. He's come down to find Jesus. But in his heart, it hasn't worked. He's just been told the worst news anyone could hear, that their daughter is dead. They tell him, "Don't bother this teacher anymore. Just give up." But what does Jesus say? He reassures him, "Do not be afraid. Just believe." Could you believe at that moment? Not one person, someone you know, and your neighbour has run up to find you, run all the way and told you that your daughter's dead. It's serious. And Jesus tells him not to believe. No, not to be afraid, just to believe. And when they get to the house, it's emphasised even more. All the neighbours are around. They're wailing, crying, making a commotion. And Jesus says, again, something obscene. "She's not dead, but asleep." And they laugh at him. Jesus takes the father and mother and the disciples that are with him into the house. And they go where the child is, dead on laid down dead. And Jesus says to her, "Talitha kum, little girl, I say to you, get up." And immediately she's raised from the dead and walks. And Jesus doesn't just raise her from the dead. We see that he looks after her. He makes sure that she's fed and looked after. He cares for her every need. So now we know what's going on in this story. Let's look back and pick out some key points. My first point is this, that we must acknowledge our sin and bring it to Jesus. So both Jairus and this woman have problems of their own. And both these problems are leading to death. Jairus has an ill daughter at home, going to die. This woman has a bleed that hasn't stopped. And we read in here that it's not got better. She's suffered under the care of many doctors and spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. She's going to die from this problem. And we can all agree that without Christ we should most certainly be afraid of death. And Jairus knows that his daughter isn't going to die. He's not just sat there and hoped that she'll get better. He'll have tried anything he can. It's his daughter. He loves her. And he's at his last string. He has to come and find Jesus because he's the only one that he thinks will be able to save her. He can see death in his life, and who does he bring it to? He may have heard of this man through other synagogue leaders who saw Jesus heal this man with a shriveled hand on the Sabbath, But unlike those who had seen Jesus do this and were angry at him for healing on the Sabbath, Jairus sees hope, someone who can heal his daughter. And again, we can imagine him, how earnestly and eagerly he would have been waiting at the crowd, just hoping to see Jesus come back. He'd only been gone a day or so, but he'd returned over the lake, and Jairus was waiting with many in that crowd that he might just come and save his daughter. Same with the woman. She's had this bleed 12 years now. In verse 26, we see that she's been through more suffering than most of us have ever experienced. 12 years of pain. Not also that she's been under the care of many doctors. She might feel manipulated, used, embarrassed of this illness. And all her money's been spent on it as well. And they haven't been able to fix her. It's hopeless. All her money is gone. I mentioned Leviticus 15. I'm going to read a part of this again. It just emphasizes how unclean and how burdensome this illness would have been. So I'm going to read from chapter 15 in Leviticus, from verse 19 all the way to verse 30. But just listen for how often the word unclean comes up. And it might be a bit strange for a young man to be talking about periods on a Sunday morning, but I'm sure we can get past that. Half the population have them. We can get past that and see the wonder of this passage. So, verse 19. When a woman has her regular flow of blood, the impurity of her monthly period will last 7 days, and anyone who touches her will be unclean until evening. Anything she lies on during her period will be unclean, and anything she sits on, again, will be unclean. Anyone who touches her bed will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Anyone who touches anything she sits on will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean until evening. Whether it is on the bed or anything she was sitting on, when anyone touches it, they will be unclean till evening. If a man has sexual relations with her and her monthly flow touches him, he will be unclean for 7 days, and any bed he lies on will be unclean. When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as the days of her period. And anything she sits on will be unclean as during her period. Anyone who touches them will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. When she is cleansed from her discharge, she must count off 7 days, and after that she will be ceremonially clean. On the 8th day, she must take 2 doves or 2 young pigeons to the priest at the entrance to the tent of meeting. The priest is to sacrifice one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. In this way, he will make atonement for her before the Lord for the uncleanliness of her discharge. So, she's unclean in the eyes of the law. 13 times the word unclean was used in this passage. And even when the bleed stops, we see in Leviticus that she's not clean. She has to make atonement for her sin. She has to find 2 of these doves or pigeons and take them to the priest. And only then will the priest make atonement for her before the Lord. And then she will be clean. So she's unclean like a leper, outcast, looked down upon by society. People would have avoided her. She couldn't have touched people. She couldn't go to the temple, much like the kind of things we've had to do this past year. We've realised how important it is and how much we miss just being able to, I don't know, shake hands, hug, touch people, be together at church. She hasn't been able to do any of that for the past 12 years. And she's hopeless and she's exhausted all of her efforts. The only one who can save her is Jesus. Both Jairus and this woman can recognize the death and pain and suffering that's in their lives. And the first step of coming to Jesus is this, acknowledging our sin, the death all the horrible things in our life are due to sin. And like these two, we can try and go elsewhere. We can try and, I don't know, spend all our money on something. We can avoid it with other distractions by pursuing work or fame or any of these things or power. And maybe you'll have temporary spouts of happiness. Maybe some things will feel like they work for a minute, but they will all fail and you'll be back at square one, just like these two people today. We must come to Jesus with our sin. But how do we do that? Jairus, and the woman go about this in different ways. Jairus is there waiting eagerly. He comes up to Jesus, tugs on his clothes and tells him, "Help me, come with me and save my daughter." But the woman is much different. She sneaks up through the crowd. She doesn't want to be seen and just touches his cloak that she might be cleansed. And quite simply, we can come to Jesus in different ways. We have to come to him through prayer, but you can pray to the Lord however you like. There's no specific algorithm you have to meet to be able to pray to God. You can come to him how you like. Come to him if you're angry, if you're scared, if you're happy, if you're praising. Come to Jesus in prayer. He knows you and he wants a relationship with you. So now we have seen how Jairus and the woman have acknowledged their sin, their problems. But now what? So, my second point. Jesus saves us from our sin. He encourages and he comforts us. So in verse 28 and 29, I'm going to flick back, we see how the woman is healed. She thought, "If I can just touch his clothes, I'll be healed." And immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. She's not done anything of her own, but she is healed. And she's made, and Jesus is not made unclean from her touching her. Instead, Jesus makes her clean. It's baffling. The same is true of Jairus' daughter. He takes her by the hand, tells her to get up, and she's saved. He's not made, that would also have been looked down upon. To touch a dead body, that would have made someone unclean. But again, instead of making Jesus unclean, he makes that person clean. We're saved through faith in Jesus and not by works of our own. Both Jairus and this woman did nothing. They simply asked, they simply believed. They had faith in Jesus' powers. And they were saved. Their problems were gone. In Leviticus 15, verse 30, we saw that once the priest had made the sacrifice, he'd make an atonement for the sin. This word atonement is the needed reconciliation or making new again of the relationship between us and our holy God. Again, atonement is the needed reconciliation or making new again of the relationship between us and our holy God, which is made possible through Jesus Christ. Romans 3 encompasses all of this, and I'll encourage you to read it this afternoon. In verses 10 to 18, it just lists how no one is righteous, not even one. It lists all these sins and how we've all fallen short. But later on, in verses 22 to 26, it shows that we're made righteous through Christ. So I'm just going to read those two bits. So first of all, verse 10 to 18. "There is no one righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands. There is no one who seeks God. All have turned away. They have together become worthless. There is no one who does good. Not even one. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways, and the way of peace they do not know. There is no fear of God before their eyes." All of us today, me and you, fall under that list. And the only way for that to be saved is through Christ.
So later on it says, in verse 22, this is the righteousness given through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. There is no difference between Jew and Gentile. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. God predestined, and here's that word atonement again, God predestined Christ as a sacrifice of atonement through the shedding of his blood to be received by faith. He did this to demonstrate his righteousness, because in his forbearance he had left the sins committed beforehand unpunished. He did it to demonstrate his righteousness at the present time, so as to be just and the one who justifies those who have faith in Jesus. Faith in Jesus is what fixes that atonement. So God saves us through the blood of his Son. The blood of his Son for you and me. And we can receive him just through faith alone. Not only that, but he wants a relationship with you. We're not saved, and that's it, left to our own devices. That woman, she was saved, but she couldn't just get away like she wanted to. Jesus asked, who touched me? And he asked it again a second time, who touched me? And the woman, knowing what had happened, had to come to his feet, trembling with fear, and told him the whole truth. Again, why is this woman trembling with fear? Surely she'd be leaping with joy, shouting praise. We should all be fearful of Jesus and God. Someone with that much power should scare you. He knows you better than you know yourself. He is holier, lovelier, mightier, more powerful than we could ever imagine. He holds your life in his hands and is rightly feared. And notice that the woman tells him the whole truth. Jesus knows our hearts and how we have sinned against him. So we must confess all that we have done to him. And when this woman comes in fear, he doesn't condemn her. He comforts and encourages. He wants to know who it is who's touched her, who touched him, who he has saved. He wants to acknowledge that person. And he says to her in verse 34, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Astonishing words. We cannot be silent Christians who are saved and then back to the world, never talk to Christ again. No, we need a relationship with him. And Jesus wants that. He wants a relationship with you. And we carry that on by continuing in prayer, reading his word to build that relationship with him. Or else we will fail and we'll fall away and end up right where we started, hopeless sinners. When you fail, like the woman, come straight back to Jesus. Tell him the whole truth and he'll comfort you. He's the only place you can go. Jairus comes across trouble on the way home as well. He is told that his daughter has died, not to bother Jesus anymore, to give up. But Jesus says to him, don't be afraid, just believe. And that's often all we can do. We don't know why bad things in life happen, why things go certain ways. We often just have to believe in Christ, in God, and the plans he has for us. When they get to the house where his daughter lay, she's dead, and all hope is gone. But like us, dead in our sin, it's not too late. Jesus comes in, takes her by the hand and tells her, little girl, I say to you, get up. And much like the woman, not only does Jesus save her, but he reassures her. He cares for her needs. He ensures that this little girl is fed and looked after. So finally, the foolish will laugh at Christ, but the humble will be eternally healed. So, only a few verses prior to this girl being saved are people laughing and mocking Jesus for claiming that she's not dead. All of us have laughed or mocked Christ in one way or another. like those at the foot of the cross laughing and mocking him. When we sin against him, when we don't trust his plans, when we don't stand up for him, we're laughing and mocking Christ. The means of the ways we can do this are countless. We do it every day in our sin. And you have to be foolish to do these things, to mock the Creator of the world. And as I've already mentioned, God is so much more than we can comprehend. He's indescribable in his power, his love, his grace, his justness. And why wouldn't you want a relationship with this God? He's healer, comforter, encourager, all these things. And you may have noticed something quite strange. Jesus tells this family not to let anyone know of what has happened. In verse 43, he gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Why wouldn't Jesus want people to know that he's healed this girl? It's quite often that after Jesus heals someone, he tells them not to go and tell anyone. And this is not because Jesus doesn't want you to come to him. This is because Jesus wants you to come to him to hear the gospel more than anything else. Often these crowds got in the way of what Jesus was there to do. He wanted to tell people the good news, that he'd come to save them. We don't go to Jesus that he might make our lives a bit better and that he might fix all the problems we've got, but that he would heal us eternally, that he would heal us of our sin. Christ wants you to come to him to be eternally healed, that you may find salvation from sin through him. So now I just want to focus on the blood of Christ. Blood's been mentioned a lot in this passage. Jesus stops the bleed of one woman, and that heals her from death. She's saved from this bleed that leads to death. But if you notice, this woman had a bleed that was going on for 12 years. Jairus' daughter is also 12 years old. At the time in the culture, a girl of 12 years old might just be starting her period, a new bleed that brings life. In that culture, she'd be ready to be married. As one bleed of death stops, and a bleed that brings life begins in this story. When Jesus is crucified, his blood is spilt. He dies like this blood that we see of this woman that is leading to death. But like the little girl in this story, Jairus' daughter, Christ is raised from the death, defeating death and sin and bringing the beginning of life anew through him and his Spirit. Christ took my place. He took your place on the cross that we might be saved. We might be healed through his blood. God knew how sinful we would be, yet he still made the world and gave us his Son as a sacrifice that we might have an eternal relationship with him. It's so easy to get caught up in life, worrying, planning, scared of illness, of death. But are you today right with Christ? Have you accepted Jesus as your Savior and asked for his forgiveness? He is the only one that can save you from your sin. And that's my final point. So we'll listen to this song. And again, it talks about how we scoffed at Christ on the cross. Think about that and think about all Christ has done for you on the cross today.